This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hello, everyone. Just to fill you in on what's been going on the last 2 weeks, you've probably noticed we've had a delay in getting episodes 99 and 100 out. And the reason is we recorded episodes 99 and 100 back on October 2nd, and around that time, Mike was getting sick, and he let us know that during the episode. In fact, when you listen to episode 99, you'll only hear him at the start and at the end of the episode, because he figured to just let us go ahead on the topic regarding the subject of episode 99, and he basically came in for episode 100, but was getting very sick, and he decided to go to the hospital, to the ER, just to check about what was going on, and the situation was very serious. Mike won't be on the podcast for the next little bit. It was very quite serious for a bit, but we just want to let you know he is, as of the time I'm recording this right now on October 12th, he is recovering right now from what happened, and just to let you know, we have a GoFundMe set up for his medical expenses right now. You can go to tinyurl.com/CossieStrong, and in fact, it's on the description of this episode, in episode 99. So you'll be hearing Mike in the start of the episode briefly and at the end of the episode, and when we get to episode 100 and we release that sometime in the future, we will have that up for you. Me and Chica right now, we're going on a week-by-week basis, trying to record the show and deciding what we're going to do from here on out. But we are going to try to get some episodes out for you guys. We're going to try to get some content in the meantime during this downtime. And we're just going to keep pressing forward because Mike wants us to do what we want to do with the show. So Mike says we can go ahead, we'll go ahead. So let's do that from here. So right now, enjoy this episode about a robot who is, for some reason, not a robot. Enjoy the story of Chameleon on Doctor Who.
This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Spoiler number one is Dr. Lee Frantz.
It stinks.
What is going on? What is going on?
Episode 99, Submission 1291. Chameleon on Doctor Who. Chameleon was a companion of the Fifth Doctor, appearing in the serial The King's Demons, which aired from March 15th to March 16th, 1983 on BBC One, and in Planet of Fire, which aired from February 23rd, 1984 to March 2nd, 1984 on BBC One.
We sing in praise of the Cold War. Against the Saracen we abhor. To free the tomb of Christ our Lord, we'll put the known world to the sword.
Welcome, my demon.
Your Majesty seems in need of a doctor.
Allow me to introduce Chameleon.
Your work.
Alas, modesty forbids such a claim. Chameleon is the tool of an earlier invader of Zerifas, and instrumental in my escape from that benighted planet.
This is your King John.
Look again.
Impressive.
A weapon used by the invaders of Zerifas, a decoy. Capable of infinite form or personality.
Interesting.
Well said, my demon. We are a complex mass of artificial neurons.
And controlled by?
Nothing more than simple concentration and psychokinetics. Look again.
Can anyone play?
Please. Quite masterly. You flatter me. I prefer Bad King John.
Okay, so Doctor Who has always been known for exceptional storytelling, fantastical ideas, and incredibly deep characters, like the Doctor and the Master and the Ronnie and Sarah Jane Smith and that shrill little chick played by Jenna Coleman. I forgot what her name. Clara Oswald.
Oh, but you're forgetting the biggest one of all,
Lord Rassilon.
No, I'm not talking about Timothy Dalton. Oh. Talking about a certain little redheaded girl.
A certain little, the Amelia.
Yeah, Amy Pond.
Come along, Pond.
Yes.
So, needless to say, Doctor Who was a series that has not been afraid to think outside the box, both in storytelling and in character development. Of course, not every character can be canine.
No.
Case in point, today's subject, Chameleon, who's mentioned as a robot, but Greg keeps telling me he's not a robot.
He's not a robot.
Now, are we talking not a robot as in Mega Man is not a robot, or not a robot as in he is an organic life form?
Sure.
Anyway, I suppose if we're going to tell the story of Chameleon, we should tell the entire story of Chameleon. And it brings us back to the year 1215, when the Doctor and... If we're going to go back to the beginning of the Chameleon story... Suppose we need to go all the way back to the beginning of the Chameleon story. So we're going to briefly sum up the King's Demons, where the Doctor and Tegan arrive in England in the year 1215. And we have King John of England.
Yeah, and he's at the castle of Sir Ranulph Fitzwilliam to extort more taxes. And when the Lord refuses to pay, the King insults him. So to defend his honor, his son Hugh takes on the King's champion, Sir Giles Erstrom, in a joust.
And also, we should add, 1215 King John, the big thing that happened that year was the Magna Carta.
Of course, the duel was interrupted. Of course, the duel is interrupted, as duels are wont to do, by the arrival of the TARDIS.
Oh, yeah. It's a good thing it was like a normal joust, because... I doubt the TARDIS would interrupt the joust from American Gladiators.
Yeah. Well, so the Doctor, Tegan, and Turlough, they're not actually in London. They're, again, in the castle of Ranulph Fitzwilliam, which is not in London. He knows this because he correctly surmises that is not King John. Because King John is in London, and they are not in London.
So then, Sir Geoffrey de Lacy, the cousin of Sir Ranulph, arrives at the castle and confirms he knows that the king is in London. Sir Giles is about to torture him as a liar during a royal banquet when the Doctor intervenes. It seems the king's champion is not who he claims to be either. Sir Giles sheds his disguise and reveals himself to be, oh my god, guys, the Master.
What?
I know. He flees in his own TARDIS, which had been disguised as an Iron Maiden.
That sounds kinky. The king knights the doctor as his new champion, and he's given full run of the castle. It's basically Home Alone at this point, because, yeah. So, the doctor confronts the king and the master and discovers the truth about everything. The monarch is actually a... called Chameleon.
What did you say he was, Chico?
I said, well, I would say he was a robot, but then you would just say he's not a robot.
No, he's not a robot.
He is even though he is mechanical.
Yeah.
But he's not a robot. He's described as a war weapon found by the master on Xerophus, who changes shape. He's a changeling. He's a changeling. I totally understand and get that he's not a robot, because if I'm gonna poach from Star Trek now, Measure of a Man, where three sort of pillars of sentient life are established: intelligence, self-awareness, and consciousness. Well, he's intelligent but highly suggestible. He's self-aware, and I can't measure conscience, so. All right, you know what? He's not a robot. He's a weapon. He's a weaponized intelligence of some sort. So he's disguised as King John. The master intends that Chameleon will behave so appallingly so as to provoke a rebellion and topple the real King John, thus robbing the world of, Mike said it himself, the Magna Carta, the foundation of parliamentary democracy. So, in a universe and a timeline where the master is always looking to find new and exciting ways to get everybody to revere him as a god, this was one of them. So the doctor resolves the situation by testing the master in a battle of wills for control over Chameleon. He takes control of the robot and steals it away in his TARDIS, spoiling the master's scheme. And history continues unabated. Chameleon reverts to its robot form, although it's not a robot, and thanks the doctor for his assistance and rescue. Chameleon pretty much acts as the tin dog, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. He's there, but he's not actually there. Accompanying the Doctor, Tegan, and Turlough on their journeys.
In fact, the only time we don't see him outside of a flashback scene in the case of Androzani is in another serial, Planet of Fire.
Oh, yes. So this is the fifth serial of the 21st season in Doctor Who. So this is now the fifth Doctor and Turlough are traveling. So in the previous entry, which would have been Resurrection of the Daleks, that was Tegan's final serial on Doctor Who.
So the Doctor would be left with Turlough at this point.
Yep, but it's the debut of a companion in this episode.
Yep. Apparently what the BBC passes for the California Girl Next Door, Perry Brown, played by the always stunning Nicola Bryant.
Yes.
And it is also marks the return of, oh, look, the master's back.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Oh, after the shenanigans he tried to pull in the five doctors.
The master never learns. Anyway, so that takes us to the desert world of Sarn, where robed natives worship the fire god Logar and follow the chief elder Timonoth, who demands obedience. Does this remind you of anything? Dissenters are known as unbelievers, and two of them, Emiant and Roskal, cause unrest when they claim to have ventured to the top of the mountain, but haven't found Logar. One of the Sarns, Malkon, is known as the Chosen One because of the unusual double triangle symbol burnt into his skin. He's also unusual for having been found as a baby on the slopes of the Sacred Fire Mountain. The same triangle symbol is found in on a metal artifact uncovered in an archaeological dig in Lanzarote, overseen by Professor Howard Foster. His stepdaughter, Perry Brown, is bored with the dig and wants to go traveling in Morocco, because that's what bored stepdaughters want to do. They want to go to Morocco. But that's not, but we're not here to talk about Perry.
We're not here to talk about Perry. We could talk about many things about Perry, but no.
That's for another episode. This, of course, what's a bored stepdaughter to do? Oh, look! The TARDIS has landed!
Oh, joy.
The Fifth Doctor returns to the TARDIS after attempting to triangulate the source of the signal being emitted by the artifact that Perry's stepfather dug up, and the ship dematerializes, seemingly on its own, arriving on Sard, and the Doctor and Turlough set off to explore. Chameleon has meanwhile made mental contact with its old controller, the Master, who attempts to assert his control and change Chameleon's appearance from that of Howard. Chameleon tries to warn Perry of the Master, but the Master succeeds in gaining control. So at this point, the Master is back in control of Chameleon. Are you following along? Okay. She flees the TARDIS with the creature in pursuit as the rumblings of the volcano of Sard gathers ferocity. So, Timonoff has damned the Unbelievers to be sacrificed to appease Logar. They flee to a secret base in the mountains filled with seismological apparatus, which the Doctor and Turlough stumble across. The Doctor informs the Unbelievers that the tunnels, which have been their refuge, are volcanic vents which will soon fill with liquid hot magma.
Liquid hot magma.
We also learn that Turlough is of the same race as those who colonized the planet. When the indigenous people see his Mesos triangle, they greet him as the second chosen one. Turlough realizes Malkon may be his brother and becomes even more worried when Perry turns up and mentions the Master. So some stuff happens. Chameleon is once again in the control of the Master. He disguises himself as the Outsider and convinces Timonoff of the appropriateness of harsh action, and when the Doctor arrives with the Unbelievers, they are all seized for burning.
Oh, no. No, not burning.
Yeah. Burning. However, Malkon and Perry arrive shortly afterwards and stop this, though not before Malkon has been injured. Turlough is aghast when he finds his relative has been shot, and the Doctor presses him for as much information as he has on the strange circumstances of Sarn. It's a long-abandoned Trion colony planet, and Turlough, a Trion, suspects some of his family were sent here after a revolution against the hereditary leading clans of his homeworld. He supposes his father died in a crash, but that Malkon survived while he himself was sent in exile to Earth, overseen by a Triad agent masquerading as a solicitor in Chancery Lane. But that's not important.
No.
Chameleon has meanwhile seized Perry and uses her to transport a black box into the control room of the TARDIS. It contains a miniaturized Master, the real thing, who has been transformed by a disastrous experiment with his trademark tissue compression eliminator. The Master thus reestablishes the psychic link with Chameleon to gain the power of movement and has maneuvered the robot, which is not a robot.
No, it's not a robot.
To Sarn so that he can take advantage of the restorative powers of the numismaton gas within the Fire Mountain. Does this make any sense to you?
No.
Okay.
Come on, Peter Grimreid. What were you thinking writing this episode?
Turlough programs the TARDIS once, it becomes imminent that it looks like we're all going to die here in this volcano, to rescue the Doctor and Perry from the gas control room for going a chance to stay aboard and escape the military arriving from his homeworld. He finds out a general amnesty has been issued and he is free to return home. Only the elders choose to remain on the planet to die facing the erupting volcanoes, Timonoff retaining his faith even in the face of Amion's revelation that Logar was merely a man in a fireproof suit. Another deception!
Oh my god! No!
Now we come to the bit where you should pay attention, because the Doctor, once again, frees Chameleon from the Master's hold over him and interrupts the numismaton experiment, adding calorific gas to the surge, but is unable to prevent the Master from reacquiring his usual size, maybe a little bit smaller, we all know how the Master is, and becoming 1,000 times stronger.
Oh.
And meanwhile, the doctor's all, you can't hear this, but I'm doing the blah, blah, blah hands motion. As the gas flow alters, the master is trapped, and the doctor watches as he is similarly immolated. Implored by the terminally wounded chameleon, he doesn't mention how did chameleon get terminally wounded?
Translation, we need to get rid of this stupid prop.
We'll get there. The doctors put the automaton out of its misery using the TCE. Escaping the destruction of the gas control room in the TARDIS along with Perry, the doctor lands to pick up Turlo, only to find that he is elected to return to Tryon now that he is a free man. Turlo tells Perry to look after the doctor. Then he parts from the doctor, thanking him for all he's learned in his travels. As the doctor and Perry return to the TARDIS, she says she has a few months vacation left and would like to spend it traveling with him. And now the doctor and Perry leave for their next great adventure. And now you know the rest of the story. I need a moment to catch my breath here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, but by the way, the next serial would be, of course, Peter Davison's final serial as the Doctor, of course, as we mentioned, The Caves of Androzani, which is remembered for one particular scene at the end.
Yeah, Perry strategically bending over to seeing what, in fact, the Doctor has become.
Yes, that's all we're going to say.
Getting back to a crucial key point. Are we going to call this a crucial key point?
Yeah, I guess we could.
Okay, so we're going to get back to a crucial key point. First thing you got to understand about Chameleon.
Well, it's not a robot.
It's not a robot. But it is played by a robot.
It is played by a robot. It's actually a real robot.
It is an actual robot. We are talking Disney World Automaton Johnny Five robot. Not a guy in a suit. It wasn't Anthony Daniels. It wasn't Dick Tufeld. It wasn't Romy J. Scharf. It was an actual puppet. Was it a puppet?
I guess it was a remote controlled puppet, I think.
No, it was controlled by computers. Basically, it was basically one step above Johnny Five and Short Circuit.
Oh, okay. So this was probably powered by what? A Commodore 64 or a BBC Micro or something?
Yeah, it was controlled by a, for all we know, it could be an Amstrad. Anyway,
A ZX Spectrum.
Yeah, we know British computers. Okay, so Chameleon was not the best thing to work with.
No.
But they did have workarounds, because Chameleon did change shape and was played by the object of which he changed shape. In The King's Demons, Chameleon as King John was played by King John.
What?
Evil Twin Syndrome. It was a giant prop.
Yeah, and the reason for this is because...
Tell us the reason, Greg.
Okay, so the executive producer of Doctor Who at the time, John Nathan Turner, thought it'd be a great
idea. The writer of previous installment Dimensions of Time.
Yeah, and a future installment, the Doctor Who Trial of a Time Lord season. But yeah, we'll get to that eventually one day. But obviously, what was one of the most popular Doctor Who companions of the day?
Sarah Jane Smith. Or the Tin Dog. Or her Tin Dog.
Yes, K-9.
Because almost got a spinoff. That's for another episode.
Oh, yeah. We'll definitely cover that in Pilot Month next year. K-9 and Company. So John Nathan Turner desperately wanted K-9 and Company to go to series, but the BBC was like, nope. No, we don't care that this special got high ratings. We're not going to put this to series. So John Nathan Turner was like, I'll show you, BBC. I'm gonna make a better robot.
With blackjack and hookers.
And so he did.
Yep, so he did. He found an ad for a robot. This incredible computer-controlled robot prop. And he thought, wow, this would be so great. What better would it be to have this robot on our show?
Yeah, there's just one problem with that. He was not an Imagineer. He was a writer.
But, oh, things got worse.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Now, obviously, the robot was difficult for the production team to control, and it malfunctioned frequently. And, oh, my God. Things were made worse, okay?
Uh-huh.
When the inventor of the robot died in a boating accident, leaving behind the knowledge of the complex codes that controlled the robot.
So this was basically a case of the greatest American hero, where the hero gets a suit but forgets the instructions?
Yeah.
Oh, good. You had me worried there.
Where was William Catt and Connie Sullivan to help us out here?
Yeah, that didn't happen.
Well, Chameleon was to appear in the serial The Awakening, designed to bridge the gap between its appearances and to remind viewers of its existence and the fact it has been hiding all this time somewhere in the TARDIS. But the scene was cut for timing reasons and was never broadcast. So eventually, this scene was recovered onto a video copy of an early edit from The Awakening Episode 1 and appears on the DVD in The King's Demons.
What are you doing?
Furthering my education. Learning about the TARDIS.
Does the Doctor know you're tapping the computer?
Of course. I won't do it any harm. You forget, I'm benign.
So the Doctor says. Still give me the willies, especially when you use that voice. Can't you find another?
Well, would you prefer this?
That's even worse.
I find the eclectic quality of Turlough's voice rather interesting.
What's happening?
I don't know. I think you should go to the console room.
Are you coming?
No. I'll only be in the way. Hurry.
Yeah, so... Okay, so what happened to Chameleon after all of that?
Well, Chameleon lives on in the greatest thing of all for sci-fi franchises. Spin-off fiction. So Chameleon appears in the spin-off novels The Crystal, but I don't know how you pronounce that.
Bucephalus?
The Crystal Bucephalus by Craig Hinton. Yeah, I'd rather it be The Crystal Bucephalus.
The Crystal Bucephalus? Yeah, The Crystal Bucephalus.
Yeah.
Are you ready for some Time Lords? Anyway.
Imperial Moon and The Ultimate Treasure, both by Christopher Bullis. In The Crystal Bucephalus, its absence from the televised stories is here explained by saying it remains secreted deep in the TARDIS for fear of being taken over by a stronger personality and used against the Doctor. Although the Doctor and Turlough request its aid while visiting a lunar park in Imperial Moon, the park's force field interferes with Chameleon's operating systems, forcing it to remain in the TARDIS until the field was shut down. In The Ultimate Treasure, it is stated the Chameleon is the product of a race known as the Gazelndori. I don't even know how you pronounce that. The Gelsandorians?
Hold on. The Gelsandorans.
The Gelsandor. Okay. All right.
You know what? I think the Orville might have ripped off Chameleon.
Some of Chameleon's personality survives due to interfacing with the TARDIS.
And the Gelsandorans give it a new body only for it to sacrifice itself to save the Doctor and Perry.
A remnant of the interface resurfaces in the Virgin New Adventures novel, Christmas on a Rational Planet. Chameleon also features in several short stories in the Doctor Who universe, notably One Perfect Twilight by Craig Hinton, where the Doctor realizes that obedience and slavery are built into Chameleon's makeup, and The Reproductive Cycle by Matthew Griffiths. In the latter story, the child of Chameleon and the TARDIS, who becomes a double of Perry, takes her place on Earth, while the real Perry travels with the Doctor. What?
Oh, it gets worse. There's actually another account on how Chameleon came about. And this is actually from the Chameleon Empire. Chameleon was one of a number of androids created by the Chameleon on Mechalion as servants through which they could experience the physical world. He was sent to Zarephath as part of an invasion force to wipe out the Zerifin, but it entered a dormant state after the command signal from Bakalian stopped transmitting. So it started out broke, and it ended up broke.
Chimerian also made a surprise appearance in the Big Finish audio story, Circular Time. A final trap set by the Master was set to trigger when the Fifth Doctor regenerated. Chameleon's mental link to the Doctor still existed, and the Master, also linked to Chameleon, was used to persuade him to not regenerate. A false life as a normal human was created within the Doctor's mind, and Chameleon watched over him as his wife. What?
Chameleon watched over him as his wife did what now?
So Chameleon pretended to be a human? And pretended to be his wife? Let's review. Chameleon is supposedly a robot, but it's not a robot.
Supposedly a robot who's not a robot.
Yeah. And then he sets a mental link to the Doctor's mind. And he becomes his wife? Pretending to be a human? Okay, Chameleon ultimately went against his orders and confessed the plan when former companion Nyssa was able to make telepathic contact with the Doctor, who was reaching out to his old companions, allowing the Doctor to change and live.
That makes no sense. But then again, this whole thing makes no sense.
And by the way, there is supposedly a curse of Chameleon. In the tongue-in-cheek reference book, Doctor Who, the completely useless encyclopedia from 1996, Chris Holoff and Steve Lyons write that an examination of Chameleon's history reveals the possible existence of a curse of poltergeist proportions. Both Terence Dudley and Peter Grimwade, who scripted the robot companion's appearances, have died. So too have Chameleon's human alter egos, Gerald Flood and Dallas Adams, who played his Howard Foster form for most of Planet of Fire. To say nothing of Chameleon's software designer, Mike Power, who was killed shortly after the decision was taken to include the robot in the series. Eric Pringle should thank his lucky stars that a Chameleon sequence was edited out of The Awakening, and Missing Adventure scribe Craig Hinton should start worrying. Hinton, who penned the Missing Adventure The Crystal Brucephalus, which featured Chameleon prominently, later died of a heart attack at the age of 42 in 2006. But guys, the legacy of Chameleon lives on in a DVD extra on the Doctor Who DVD for the King's Demons. It's a 14-minute short called Metal Man, and it describes the troubled history with this robot who's not a robot.
He's not a robot.
No. But there was one person who was very happy when Chameleon had to go. And it was Peter Davison. And let's play the clip.
For me, it was great glee, I must admit. And any hint of sadness was just acting.
I'm looking at pictures of Chameleon in the Metal Man excerpts. He looks like what would happen if Crichton had a kid with Kikiter. Google it.
But yeah, Peter Davison was so happy. He's like, that wasn't even acting. I was so happy I never had to work with that robot again. Because they couldn't get the thing to work, and they literally had to like lay the robot down. In the scene that's in Planet of Fire where he's like, the Master telepathic! Because they couldn't get it to stand up. So it's like, we'll just lay the stupid robot down.
Something interesting. I wouldn't put it past the BBC to take bits and pieces of Chameleon and repurpose it as Crichton's suit in Red Dwarf. That's another one for Pilot Month. The aborted American version of Red Dwarf.
You probably have it somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, this whole Chameleon thing was so... among the companions of Doctor Who, Chameleon is not thought of as...
Chameleon was Cousin Oliver.
Chameleon was
Cousin Oliver.
He was the Cousin Oliver of the Doctor Who canon. He was a terrible prop, was not a robot, but, oh my god.
Definitely had robotic issues, though.
Yeah. And all because freaking John Nathan Turner was pissed at the BBC.
Just give John Nathan Turner what he wants. This never happens.
No. Just watch what happens when Michael Grade leads BBC One.
Oh, jeez.
And, yeah, the less said about that, the better.
Uh-huh.
Michael Grade was the Jeff Zucker of the 80s.
Oh, Michael Grade was the Jeff Zucker of the 90s. And 2000s. Michael Grade is a terrible person.
Just like Jeff Zucker.
Well, Metal Man, time to take you out back and shrink you into nothingness again, I suppose.
Yeah. Because when it was all said and done, Chameleon on Doctor Who, he was just another thing on TV.
Didn't even make it to the action figure stage of popularity. That's just sad.
I'm sure maybe someone would buy a Chameleon action figure. Maybe? What, how about a Chameleon convention exclusive Funko Pop?
Oh, God, are you kidding me?
Like, put it as a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive one year. The kids would love it.
You know what? The kids would love it.
Yeah.
And that would have huge resale value, because any Comic-Con exclusive Funko goes for big bucks. Plus, you're going to have at least one completist out there who needs to have all the Doctor Who Funko Pop dolls.
He needs all the Doctor Who Funko Pop dolls.
Got to get them all.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But you know something? You know something? I do have something worth your attention.
Oh, I know what this is going to be. Play the music.
eBay Price is Right, because this episode just needs to fill out some time here. Okay, what you two are bidding on is an attacks card. It's a 2012 Topps Doctor Who Alien Attacks Chameleon card. 47 defense, 45 attack.
We're bidding on a Topps Chameleon card?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Topps actually printed this shit.
Oh, my God.
I'm guessing it's for some sort of card game, not unlike maybe like a Magic or something like that.
Yes, it's a Doctor Who Alien Attacks card game.
Okay, so it's not like a trading card, okay.
Right, it's a trading card game. And you're going to bid in dollars and cents here. Mike, we haven't heard from you all episode. Why don't you start the bidding, please?
I talked about the Magna Carta, and I talked about the rarity of Funko Pop dolls at Comic-Con. I've done my share of the heavy lifting in this episode.
Yeah, you're like,
it's Doctor Who. Those two have got it.
Well, beyond that, I don't feel absolutely great right now, so I wanted to limit the amount of talking I was doing.
Okay.
Can you say how rare this is?
I cannot say how rare this is because it does not say.
Oh, well, that kind of sucks.
It is. I can tell you right now, I can't tell you anything aside from it's Chameleon.
It's Chameleon!
And it ships out of Check Out My Cards of the Pacific Northwest.
Okay, so it's this side of the Atlantic. Okay, yep. I'm going to say that there has to be some demand because it's Doctor Who. I'm going to say $10.99.
Greg?
$1, Bob!
I got your dollar right here.
Hey, put that away. You might put somebody's eye out. The actual buy it now price of this Alien Attacks card with Chameleon on it, $1.40.
Yeah!
Oh, jeez! Oh, my God. Yeah,
you're paying more to ship the damn thing.
$1.
No, and I am not kidding. It says $1.40 plus $4.99 shipping.
That's almost as bad as the Golden Balls Wii game that sold for $2.50 but cost $43 to ship.
What?
You're here for that.
I know. I'm just thinking to myself.
Hey, it's not as ridiculous as like the VHS recorded copy of the tag team pilot.
Oh, wow.
Remember that?
Yeah, that's a deep cut.
If you want to see both episodes where Chameleon featured, they like to stream the classic Doctor Who's on Pluto, and I believe Amazon Prime Video as well, and either HBO Max or Hulu or BritBox or one of those things.
Well, HBO Max just has the new series.
So. Okay, never mind. No, then not HBO Max. Unless somebody wants to make a cruel in joke, which, given what passes for writing in Doctor Who for the last three or four seasons, wouldn't put it past them.
Oh, what? Bring Chameleon back from the dead?
Bring Chameleon back from the dead.
Oh, next they'll bring Adric back from the dead.
You know what? That's a good idea. I'm gonna start writing that.
I think they might have already done it in Big Finish, I think.
Okay, there you go. Well, thanks to Big Finish, nobody. It's like Doctor Who characters and comic book characters. No one is ever really dead.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, for crying out loud, they're making what? They're making a new fourth Doctor Adventures series with Tom Baker. Back in the role as the fourth Doctor, and they have like Sarah Jane and Harry, the characters back in it, which should be pretty good. And actually, Sarah Jane's being played by Elizabeth Sladen's daughter.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yes.
That is awesome. Well, you know what else is awesome? Our website. It was a thing on TV.com.
Yeah.
Go there, follow us, learn about the show, learn about us, listen to the past 98 episodes, follow us on all of our social medias, and of course, stream our episode where fine podcasts can be streamed. Don't forget, like, comment, subscribe, 5 stars only, because we crave attention.
Yeah, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes, because, I mean, come on. I mean, what we got, like, we need the 5 stars.
Five stars only.
We are over 10,000 downloads, people. We need all the reviews we can get.
Yes, we do. Tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your friend's mom.
Oh, I should also mention that we got 99 podcasts and Son of the Beach ain't one.
Oh! And you have 99 podcasts. That only means that the next one is number 100.
Ooh! Woo!
We are dragging out all of the in jokes for our next episode as we go back to where it all started.
Yeah, we know so much more about the topic, and if you don't know what the topic is by now, you have not been here for some time. We're going back because we've learned a lot more information about the program in the last year, and we didn't have Dear Chico with us the first episode or two, so he's going to chime in on that.
Yeah, because we didn't have Chico on here till episode 2.
Yeah, episode 2 or episode 3, absolutely.
I'm a late straggler, what can I say?
Yeah, so we'll finally hear his long-awaited thoughts on this topic.
I wonder what it is.
You know what? I'll just preface this by saying you guys know this. It worked so much better on paper.
I'll agree
with
you.
That's not saying much, but there you go.
Well, I'll just say, after watching a lot of this, I gotta say, it really has grown on me.
It really has.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll cover it on the next installment of It Was a Thing on TV. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Wow!
Chameleon. No good. Sorry.
I'm sorry too, Chameleon.
Destroy me. please.